This is your daily news fix, the Daily Brief, right here on RCR.
Good afternoon. It's Thursday, February 13th, and I'm Megan McNamara bringing you RCR's Daily Brief. First up, it's Paul Brennan with the news. Then we'll be hearing two different perspectives on the new investor visa. Will it grow our economy or sell us down the river? Next, we'll be joined by RCR political analyst William McGimsey, who will offer his insights on the country's broader economic performance. And we'll finish up, of course, with Natalie Cutler-Welsh and RCR Signpost. Now to the news.
Good afternoon. I'm Paul Brennan for RCR. A government consultation document has proposed major regulatory changes for the media, including an expansion of the broadcasting standards to cover all media outlets, including RCR. The proposal has raised serious concerns about censorship. The Broadcasting Standards Code enforces rules of balance, fairness, and accuracy, but critics warn it could lead to the suppression of certain opinions. For instance, under this regime, RCR's views on the COVID response may have been entirely censored. The Free Speech Union said the proposal would further erode trust in the media at a time when public confidence in traditional outlets is already at record lows. In other New Zealand news, Trade Minister Todd McClay downplayed the impact of fresh US tariffs on steel and aluminium, estimating an extra $5 million in costs for exporters. McClay said the figure was not significant in the context of New Zealand's overall export earnings. The Trump administration placed tariffs of 25% on steel and aluminium imports earlier this week. Meanwhile, the Kaipara District Council is pursuing $24,000 in costs from Te Runanga o Ngāti Whātua following a failed High Court challenge. The legal battle centred on the council's decision to abolish its Māori ward, with claimants arguing there had been inadequate consultation. Kaipara District Council remains the only council to successfully remove its Māori ward. Parliament's Privileges Committee has ruled that Māori Party MP Takuta Ferris breached conduct rules by accusing MPs of lying. In a speech last September, Ferris said many members of Parliament were masters of obfuscation, lies, in other words. He later denied that he had directly called MPs liars and utterly rejected claims that he misled the House. The committee disagreed and required him to apologise. Turning to international news, Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky has proposed a territorial exchange with Russia to end the war and requested that the US facilitate negotiations. Zelensky suggested swapping part of the city of Kursk for an unspecified Russian-occupied Ukrainian territory. Russia rejected the proposal, pointing out that Ukraine currently has little control over Kursk. US President Donald Trump remained confident in his proposal to transform Gaza into a luxury destination. But Jordan's King Abdullah II showed skepticism during their White House meeting. Earlier this month, Trump suggested that the US could take control of Gaza, though no specifics have been outlined. King Abdullah said he was reserving judgment while awaiting Egypt's response to the plans.
Now to one of the biggest stories of the week, the government's new investor visa. In a bid to attract rich investors to the country to boost our ailing economy, the new visa will require a minimum investment of $5 million for 3 consecutive years in exchange for fast-tracked residency. Some applicants will only need to spend 1 week a year in the country, and speaking English is no longer required. Paul Brennan spoke to Deputy Prime Minister Winston Peters earlier this week. Here's what he had to say about the visa.
Do we need the money? Is it that tight?
We've always needed the money. Going back to Vogel's time in the late 1800s, we've always needed the money. And we, as you know, have had in the past attempts to have a saving scheme. First, the Kirk government, 74, 72, 75, tried it. That got overturned by the national government coming in under Muldoon. I tried a referendum, you recall, in 1996, 97. And it was going to be you will get a tax break of 8%, and you can save that, you'll have it all personalised. And that in the referendum was voted down. Now, they might have voted me down, but they didn't vote away the problem. And here we are now, desperately needing money. And yes, the answer to your question is, do we need money? Yes, we do. But we need it for production, wealth creation, added value, and exports, not for consumption.
However, the plan has its critics. In fact, economist Rob McCulloch was scathing in his assessment of the visa. Let's take a listen.
I looked very closely at the visa, by the way, and I also listened to the entire press conference that Chris Luxon gave over it, about it, and my view is that it's a con. He misled us all in his conference. He was arguing we need sort of skills and direct investments to sort of build up science and technology in the country. This visa has nothing to do with that. You are not required to make a direct investment and bring skills and talent and know-how to Kiwi companies. You are completely able to simply invest in a managed fund and qualify for this visa. You don't have to speak the language, and you can just flick some money into one of the big banks' managed funds, and you're on the road to Kiwi passport. So what's the point of that? You're selling the passport like some shonky banana republic, and you're inviting in people who may just drain education, infrastructure, healthcare. They don't have to contribute any skills. They're not going to grow the economy. All they need to is flick some funds into one of the big banks' managed funds. Why? Because my impression is, and I'll make an accusation, the Prime Minister's got into bed with the big banks, and there he is. He's done a backroom deal with them. The big banks have want to get more commissions from their funds, and throwing in a pathway to a Kiwi passport is a good way to do that. So I am making an accusation on Luxon. When did you speak to the banks? When did you speak to the big funds and decide to throw in a passport so they could flick a few more bucks their way? I think it's a disgrace.
Well, he's certainly not pulling any punches. Continuing with the theme of economic performance and governance, let's hear from William McGimsey.
Thanks, Megan. Prime Minister Christopher Luxon says he's going for growth. But the problem is, after over a year of being in charge, the economy is still in the tank, the books are still in the red, and the policies his government are pursuing doom us to ongoing economic hardship. GDP has gone backwards by around 1% in both the September 2024 and June 2024 quarters. Two quarters in a row means we're in recession. Sure, they inherited a mess. The previous finance minister, Grant Robertson, was one of the biggest spenders in our history. But when people vote for National, they think they're voting for fiscal responsibility. And not only has Nicola Willis refused to rein in Robertson's record spending, she has actually increased it. In the background to this economic debate is the huge new commitment the New Zealand government has agreed to around carbon emissions. This target has our primary sector, the part of the economy that actually pays the bills, extremely concerned. It is going to be very difficult, if not impossible, to have a growing economy and maintain our first world standards of living if we remain committed to the economic straitjacket of emissions reduction. The biggest global emitters, like China and India, aren't doing a whole lot to reduce their emissions, and Donald Trump has now pulled the US out of the Paris Climate Agreement. So why are we in New Zealand still sacrificing our economy on the altar of global climate change when we're such a minuscule proportion of global emissions and nothing we do in practice makes a difference to the climate? There is no reason to continue doing this except virtue signalling and economic masochism. Over a year into the coalition government's term, when we look at what's happening in the US with Elon Musk and Doge, we see that in a matter of weeks after taking office, huge amounts of waste, fraud and abuse in the US federal government have been publicly revealed in what I imagine is a precursor to them being removed from the federal budget. Weren't we promised something similar with David Seymour's Ministry of Deregulation? Where has that gotten to? Big things are happening in America. If they can do them over there, why can't we do them here in New Zealand?
Thanks, William. That concludes our news and commentary for today. Up next, it's RCR Signpost with Natalie Cutler-Welsh.
Thanks, Megan. Hey, everyone. Natalie here with The Signpost, your ultimate hub for everything RCR, news, interviews, and ways you can get involved. RCR 360 is back today. Don't miss episode 2 as Alistair Harding and Marie Buskey dive into the gene technology bill and what you need to know before the 17th of Feb deadline. That's this coming Monday. Having your say takes as little as 5 minutes. You can head over to www.genetechgamble.co.nz to grab your free action pack and feedback template and make sure your voice is heard. You won't want to miss Paul Brennan's explosive interview with Professor Rob McCulloch, who slams the government's Active Investor Plus visa, calling it a con job that lets wealthy investors buy residency without contributing to the economy. He's accusing PM Chris Luxon of favoring big banks and recycling old political mates into top roles. Media Matters with Marie and Marty is also on the way. They're breaking down what's missing in the media this week, asking whether the knives out for Christopher Luxon are justified, and looking into the ongoing fallout from the USAID revelations. Plus, Marie also brings us the latest antics on Oinky Lux in Kiwi Farm, who faces farmyard rejection in a surprise twist. In Perigo's Perspective, Paul Brennan and Lindsay Perigo tackle the current political landscape and the ongoing controversies involving figures like Trump and Musk. But Lindsay does express excitement about political shifts and the exposure of hidden truths. I am very excited about that too, Lindsay. On Friday, I will be chatting with Ilya Kneppenhult about the rise of the Offline Club. This is an amazing community promoting digital detox and swapping screen time for real-life connections. In this interview, we're going to talk about boundaries, being present, and the upcoming 24-hour Global Digital Detox Challenge. You can check that out. And there's also the Fourth Estate with Marty Gibson and guests. We've got Money Talks with Farzan Irani and the weekly roundup with Diwa Deboer and William McGimsey. If you missed Paul's cracker interviews yesterday, you can catch them on the app. You can listen now to his conversations with Mark Hooper on the government's climate targets and Winston Peters on NZ First's fluoride referendum, the gene tech bill, and much, much more. And speaking of the app, you can now listen continuously. Just head to the RCR Talk section, select the interview, and tap the little video camera icon, which is under the video, to switch to audio-only mode. The app will keep playing from one interview and roll on through to the next. Perfect for tuning in on the go. That's it from me. Megan, back to you.
And that's all from RCR's Daily Brief team. As always, you'll find all the links to the interviews featured in today's episode below. Thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you tomorrow with another edition of the show. Until then, see ya!